I'm Jen. I'm your coach, a life coach, a family coach, business health coach. And every weekend, this show is about helping us create healthier homes, better relationships, lower stress, and more intentional lives. Now, not perfect lives, because honestly, that would be exhausting. Better lives, lives where we understand ourselves a little bit more. We can repair when things go sideways. And one of the most common questions I get from families wanting help is, I'm a yeller. How do I stop yelling? I start every day saying, today I'm going to stay calm. Today I'm going to be sweet. And then it's 7:42 in the morning and your kid's still running around half naked. Yeah, there's no calm. We're going to look at this today, and I'm bringing in an expert with real tools that we can use to stop yelling. Later in the show, real coaching with someone who's got ADHD, she's got kids, her home feels really disorganized and chaotic. I have some strategies to help. And then a guest who works with teens who's going to share three things kids wish parents understood. But first, let's begin at home with the moments that can feel small from the outside, but very, very big and overwhelming when we're in them. Joining me is Dr. Kristen Cook, a pediatrician and a mom. So she understands both the professional side of child development and also the very human reality of parenting when we're tired, overstimulated, simply at the end of our rope. Kristen, I'm so glad you're here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Now, I'm assuming you were a pediatrician before you were a mom. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. I was practicing for 2 years before I had my son.
And I wonder, did anything shift? Did anything change when you were a mom and all of a sudden this isn't just textbook now? You're living it?
Right. Oh, my gosh. Everything changed. Everything. You know, in medical school, in residency, they didn't teach us very much about child development and why kids act the way they do, or how to be a more effective parent, how to create more peaceful parenting journeys. That's all stuff I learned once I became a mom.
Right. It's one thing to read about biological development in a textbook, but now when your kid is absolutely melting down or having a tantrum in the grocery store, you've had to walk this out. Do you get lots of parents asking you how they can stop yelling?
Oh, all the time. All the time.
Yeah. And what do you say?
So first of all, there tends to be a lot of judgment and shame that parents have around yelling. I want people to understand that yelling is actually a biological response, okay? Yelling is a sign that your fight, flight, freeze mode has been activated. Your emotional brain has taken over. It's hijacked any type of self-control that you have. Uh-oh. Now, that doesn't mean that it's a great response.
It's not ideal.
Biologically driven.
Okay.
However, there are ways that we can take back control of that brain that says, hold on, wait a minute, think before you start screaming.
And I know everyone listening is like, tell me, Dr. Kristen Cook is here. Yeah. She is a practicing pediatrician, also a mom, and she hosts a podcast called Mom Doc Talk with Dr. Kristen Cook. So what are some tools and strategies parents can apply right now to maybe reduce yelling?
Yeah, this is my favorite parenting strategy. I call it duck on a pond. So a little backstory on this. Years and years ago, when my husband and I were first dating, we had, I think it was a wedding out of state. We had to fly there. Weather was bad. The flight got canceled. I very naively and very young and reactively just ripped into the airline staff.
Uh-oh.
Like they can change the weather.
Right.
Right? Like they have any control over that. And I am hot and sweaty and frustrated. And I look at my now husband and he's just standing back like, okay. And I'm looking at him like, support me, join in, yell.
Join in as I lose it.
Yes. And I go, oh, what is your deal? And he goes, I'm a duck on a pond, baby. Duck on a pond.
And how did you take that in the moment? Oh, I'm guessing not well.
I stormed off. I left the luggage. I'm like, security's going to be coming for us because our bags are in the middle of the airport.
Yes.
But he had a point, you know, like if you think about a duck on a pond, they look so serene, right? They're just gliding along like everything's good. But what's going on under the surface? Their little legs are kicking like crazy. And so duck on a pond became my phrase that when I am about to lose it on my kids, I step back, I picture a duck on a pond, and it helps me reset my nervous system so that I can respond in a calm manner. So what I encourage parents to do, think of your own phrase, word, visualization, something that can help you find your calm and remind yourself to take a breath before you respond to your child. And this technique to work, you have to practice it every single day. So you may want to write your phrase on a post-it note and stick it on your bathroom mirror, on the fridge. Take it to work with you. Mm. Intentionally practice this technique time and time again, and it will be the single most useful tool you have to stop yelling at your kids.
So the solution isn't just to bite your tongue. The solution isn't just quit it. Just don't yell. The solution is really to take back control of your nervous system. And duck on a pond, I think, is fantastic because I'm picturing on the outside, we're calm. On the inside, I'm freaking out inside. But on the outside, we are calm, baby. Mm-hmm. I like this a lot. What about for the mom that would say, I've tried that. I've tried everything. I've tried counting to 10. I've tried deep breaths. I've tried stepping into another room. Nothing works. What would you say to that, mom? Do you ever come across a parent that is just, they have nothing left in them?
Yeah, you're trying to use someone else's strategy. You need to experiment and find what works best for you. I taught my sister-in-law this technique years ago, and her phrase is puppies running in a park. You know, that's so different than duck on a pond, but that's what she found works for her. So if you're finding that this technique doesn't work, you either haven't found the right phrase or you haven't practiced it enough.
And you're absolutely right. We need to practice it in the little moments because to expect our brain to be able to stay calm in those big moments, if you haven't practiced it in smaller things, then no. If you can't do it at home, it's not going to work on the playground, at the play date, at the swimming lesson. You have to practice it at home in the smaller moments. For me, it's interesting. I love duck on a pond. But for me, I think what I've used is get the popcorn. You imagine yourself, what's going to happen next? Like, oh, this is interesting. Like, wow, what's she just said that? She said that out loud. What's going to happen next? And you can do that with your kids too, because I think for me, it's a really great reminder that I am not my child. My child's behavior isn't me. And I don't need to take any shame. If my child does something humiliating, that doesn't mean I need to be humiliated.
Right.
This isn't me. This is a child. This is a typical kid behavior thing. And we're going to work on this. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing I tell myself.
Yeah. Well, and kids are learning, right? Their brain is not fully developed. We cannot expect our kids, even our teenagers, to think or act like adults. That's expecting too much.
Dr. Kristen Cook on the show today, giving us practical tools as a pediatrician, but also a mom. She's lived all of this. You can find her podcast anywhere you get your podcast. Look up Mom Doc Talk with Dr. Kristen Cook. Thank you so much for joining our show today.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Stay with me. We're going to do some one-on-one coaching. You get to be a fly on the wall and learn from a mom who just feels like life is too stressful and overwhelming. And then an expert who works with families, teens, kids every single day is going to share three things that she sees behind the curtains. Three things that kids will tell her that maybe they wouldn't quite tell their parents. Three things parents need to know later in the show. Stay with me. It's A Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I want you to have a better life, truly. And that means that we have to tackle the things that are holding us back, whether it is physical, dealing with stress, taking care of our own bodies, our health. Maybe it's work-life balance, getting ahead in your career. Maybe it's families. I am here. I'm your coach. I'm a life coach, a health and wellness coach, and also a parenting coach. Let's do some real coaching. Andrea has joined the show. Now, she went to our website, A Better Life with Jen Dean, clicked the button that says, I want some free coaching. Andrea, I'm so glad you did that. You want to talk about strategies and tools for running a home with ADHD.
Yeah, so we have a family of four, and we all have wildly different personalities. Some of us struggling with ADHD, and I'm just really struggling with how to keep things on track, considering my ADHD as the mother. Nobody's really helping me cope with this. I'm right? expected to regulate myself and the children.
Yeah. How's that going for you?
So great. So great. That's why we're here, Jen, because everything's perfect.
Yes. Tell me, what has it been like for you to try and herd all of these cats?
I feel like life is slowly devolving into chaos is the best way to describe it. Mm. Previously, prior to kids and prior to some really significant life stuff, I felt like I could manage my, at that point, I didn't realize I had ADHD, mm-hmm. but I managed it in certain ways with systems and cleaning. And before kids, you wouldn't know it, but I was a very clean and organized person. And now there's really specific areas of my life that are organized, and then the rest just goes to crap.
Ah, yes.
And then two kids in elementary school, so the stuff that they have coming into the house, just the massive quantities of things that elementary school kids bring into your house every single day, mm-hmm. and just all of those things that need to be juggled, and I just can't stay on top of it.
A lot of diagnosed and undiagnosed ADHD adults find when they look back, they could mask and cope, mm-hmm. and they had strategies that they learned how to be highly efficient, super productive, highly functioning. And then what ends up happening sometime around midlife, kids get older, and the things that they used to do, all of a sudden, they're not working. Mm-hmm. And we're at a loss. We don't know what to do now. Mm-hmm. And our world is just falling apart. And we end up feeling like we are just running around like crazy, kind of failing at everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can relate to that?
100%.
Normally with ADHD, the strategies are controlling your environment and systems, because that seems to be the biggest support when it comes to ADHD, of just trying to remove as many of the distractions as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think we could do? What are the couple of biggest things if we could work on those? Mm-hmm.
I feel like I don't have good systems in place, I think is the biggest thing. And even when I do have a general idea of this is what needs to happen, then sometimes things go off the rails with kids. If you're dealing with something really specific that's happening, you have to be able to roll with the punches.
So if I were to say to you, we need to find a chunk of time, a couple of hours maybe, to sit down and make an easy, repeatable meal plan, something that would save you time because you're not running to the store and we're not cooking a bunch of things from scratch. We're going to come up with a system to tidy the house before meals. What does that make you feel? Does that make you feel relief, or does that make you feel more anxiety?
I think the meal plan situation would definitely make me feel more relief, you know, especially if these are children-approved meals.
Yes.
Our kids aren't super picky eaters, but there's always that aspect of it, right? And then, yeah, like the tidying before meals thing, the other thing that I deal with there is I come home from work and I am flipping exhausted. I just feel like I've got nothing left in the tank. And wouldn't you know it, I'm picking up my kids from school. So we're all arriving home with our chaos at the same time. And that's often when kids are falling apart after school as well. So I think that's where I struggle, is sort of with that window of time from 4 to 6 p.m. when I feel like nobody is productive.
Ugh. And then at that point, after six, it's dinner, it's baths, it's homework, it's bed. And then you feel like there's another day. It's written off.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you think about how much time you're spending, just even mentally thinking about what am I going to eat next? Like how nobody told us the majority of our life was going to be like, we're going to eat again. What is it going to be? And who is going to make it?
It is the most boring conversation that you have to have ad nauseum.
every single day, right? So if we can look at meal planning and then making it simple and easy, and I realize not everyone agrees, but paper plates, man, recycle them.
Yeah.
Do it, but make it easy, at least at the beginning till we get the system going. And then, now brace yourself, the 10-minute tidy. I realize when you come home after work, you don't want to. But when I work with families, if we can institute a 10-minute tidy before every meal and before bed, and if it just becomes the routine that, hey, supper's almost ready, breakfast is going to be soon, it's almost lunchtime, it's almost bedtime, that we do a 10-minute tidy as a family. If you think about it, if we have four people, let's say they're all old enough to be helpful, that's the equivalent of 40 minutes of tidying four times a day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, if they're home for lunch, dinner, and then bedtime. Now, I realize when you have nothing left in the tank, that's a really hard ask. But I promise you this, if we can get into the routine of it, we want it to become like brushing our teeth. We want it to become like something we don't even think about. Like, oh, dinner's almost ready. We're going to set the table soon. 10-minute tidy. Everyone put some things away. I don't care what you do, you tidy something. How could this help you if we could implement it?
I feel like that could be a game changer. If I can get people to buy into it by maybe, like, I don't know, threatening not to feed them, that's probably not a good parenting strategy. But no, that could be an absolute game changer. And especially, I think even just to get the kids sort of in the right frame of mind that, you know, this is their house, they have to take care of it as well.
It's true. Oftentimes kids will say, but I'm not done yet. I'm still going to play with this, whatever. But you and I know that after dinner, they often find something else.
To mess up.
And then you've got more piles and it just becomes more overwhelming. And I think parents that have ADHD themselves, that have kids with ADHD, having clutter around just adds to that. And when we have a system to keep track of it, even if you came home at 4 o'clock and the house was a disaster, you would know there are two more times in the day. That we're going to get to tackle some of this. It's not going to be all on your shoulders. It ends up becoming a routine. This becomes everybody is chipping in. Let's incorporate that. Let's get the kids to buy in. I'm okay with charts and incentives. I'm okay with giving an allowance to start to get the habit going. I'm okay with that. Let's have dessert and treats for everyone that's done the 10 minutes before dinner. Let's bribe them.
But to be clear, you're not okay with not feeding them if they don't clean.
To be clear,
feed your children.
We do need to feed our children.
Okay, fine. Yes. I will.
Implement some of these things and then let me know how it's going. I feel like this is going to be a game changer. And if we can make it a habit before meals, it's not going to be up to you every single time.
I love it.
Andrea, thank you. If you would like some coaching, go to abetterlifewithjendean.com. After the break, three things that kids wish their parents knew. It's A Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. We are now working towards the end of September. Back to school, hopefully, is starting to feel like a routine. We're starting to settle into the schedules. That's the hope, right? Or it's completely backslidden and the first few weeks you had really cool snacks and lunches for the kids and now you're digging around for old crackers. It could go either way. Regardless, we need help with the kids. I have here a very special guest. This is Jory Stockdale. She is a youth pastor. She has her master's in working with families, parents, and kids. Thanks for being on the show, Jory.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you work with families all the time. Parents, youth, teens, little kids, preschool, everybody. Tell me, what are the things that you see this time of year? Kind of, right? Are kids falling into good patterns, old patterns? What's going on?
It's always unique for each family, right? That's what I love about working with families. It's unique for each family. And so there's the families that the kids are right in the routine the first day. And then there's the families that are still figuring it out in October. And I just think it's okay. Give yourself permission to be whatever family need works for you.
Okay, well, let's lower the bar for ourselves and have a little bit of grace. So if you're here and you're like, man, I still haven't managed to get up when my alarm goes off, then you're not alone. Jory, with all of the work you do, I thought it would be really fascinating to have you on because I think you see things that maybe parents don't see and probably kids tell you things that they don't always feel like they can tell mom or dad. So what are some things that you see that parents need to know?
The first thing that I think is important, and that sometimes it comes across a little harsh, so you have to bear with me as you think about this one, but they need you to be their parent, not their friend.
Ooh, ouch.
It's a critical distinction, and it changes over time, but it's a really important thing. And I think what's really important to understand is it's really from your perspective. My child can't be my best friend.
So what does that look like? Because I think all of us as parents, all of us would say, oh, I don't do that. My kid isn't my best friend, but you might push back and say otherwise.
Yeah. These are some of the things like I was thinking about when I was thinking about what it looks like when your child is your best friend. And it can be as young as like 4 or 5, all the way to like when they're like in their late teens, right? You're getting your friendship needs met by your kid.
You're hanging out with them.
Yeah. Your needs are being met by them. So they're replacing what you would be doing with other adult friends. There are times that you're going to do that because you are building a relationship with your kids.
Right.
But when you're getting your needs met that way, you don't have any other outlet, or it's your primary outlet that you're getting your friendship needs met through your kids. Mm. You're crossing in those lines. You're telling them or sharing things that they don't need to know. So this is one of those really critical ones. I think people need to understand that kids do need to know that you go through struggles. They just don't need all the details. They really don't need all the details.
But then they'll see that you're human.
They can see that you're human without knowing all the dirty details that, you know, they don't need to know everything that happened at work. They don't need to know how bad your boss was that day, or they don't need to know how much in debt you are. Or like, there's just so many things that you share in a friendship relationship with your kid that you have that you wouldn't share if you were meeting those relationship needs with someone else. Right.
Interesting.
And I think part of it, Jen, is like there's this backlash of where previous generations didn't tell their kids anything.
Right.
So that's not good either.
Wait,
right?
So we've got Jerry Stockdale here saying, don't hang out with your kids ever.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
No.
I'm saying make sure that you actually have a friendship groups, healthy relationships with other adults, and not get your needs met by your kids. I'm saying share your struggles, but don't share all the dirty details.
What I see when I'm working with families, so when I've been super nanny going into homes, is I can see this playing out in ways kids' brains, they're not able to take this as, oh, mom or dad had a bad day. They will hold on to that offense. They will be mad at your brother forever, or the cousin. And I promise you, they will bring it up to other people.
Yes.
And you will be mortified.
Yes, absolutely. And they'll take the anxiety, and you've been way past it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But they're going to take on that burden, right?
And they're going to hold on to it for a long time. Yeah. And they're not going to understand, oh, this was venting.
Yes.
They're going to share it with everyone.
And if you want to go into the extremes of it, when, you know, you're in difficult relationships and the kids see all of it, you're exposing your kids to trauma. That is that's part of childhood trauma when they walk through those kinds of things. And we don't want to do that to our kids.
No.
We don't.
We're already going to make enough mistakes. Yeah. Let's not.
Yeah, let's not add to it.
Let's not. Jory Stockdale is here. She's got her master's in working with families of all kinds, and she's got some wisdom for us. She's sharing 3 things that every parent needs to know. And the first one is you can't be their best friend.
Yeah, but can I say one thing, though, with that, just to wrap that one up? They can say that you are their best friend.
Yeah.
You know, you got a 5-year-old and it's like, my mommy is my best friend, or my dad is my best friend. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful relationship.
But it shouldn't
go the other way.
I will admit, Jory, when I had one child, I remember going to a restaurant. He was 4 years old and we sat in this restaurant and the server came over and said, oh, who do you have with you today? And I said, it's my best friend. And the server looked at me like, what? He's 4.
That's awesome.
I've learned since then.
Yes.
So we can all learn and grow. Yes. I had the best of intentions, but you're right. My whole world was my child to a fault.
Yes. But here's the beautiful thing. One day, it can be your best friend.
Now.
Right? Now.
He's 27.
Exactly. And you can have this beautiful relationship when they're adults.
Yes. And it is more fun because he's not four anymore. Jory Stockdale, stay with me. We've got two more things, right? Parents, you don't know this and you need to know this about your kids. Stay with me. It's A Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I am your coach, but one of my favorite things to do is bring in more experts. We have Jory Stockdale here on the show today. She is a family pastor, a youth pastor. She works with families. She has her master's in family ministry. She works with kids, adults, and she says there's things she sees and things that kids tell her that they wouldn't necessarily tell you as mom or dad. So she is letting us behind the curtain today, sharing three things parents need to know. Now, the first one before the break is you can't be your kid's best friend. And now, what else? What else is there? I'm afraid to ask.
I think this is one that parents are aware of, but I think that it's really important that we understand how big of a deal it is for this generation. Anxiety is real. I've worked with families now for over 25 years, and I have not seen it to this level in the last 5 years before. It has greatly increased at every age and every stage and in all backgrounds. It's with kids that people would think they shouldn't have anxiety, right? Parents think, why does my child have this? And then there's the kids that we think, oh, that, of course, that makes sense. Doesn't matter. That's not actually, it's just across the board. Anxiety is real. It's a really big concern for this generation. At the same time, I think parents need to understand that there's ways to parent and help your kids to not let this become something that controls or negatively impacts their lives.
What I like to say is, anxiety might explain something, but it doesn't excuse something. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And that's part of why one of the things I think you can do as parents is think about and have the conversations that help you get to the root of it. And sometimes that is actually also listening to the other adults in their lives, the teachers that are in their lives, hopefully grandparents, extended families. There's other people that they'll share clues with that they can then pass on to you to get to some of the, what's the roots of it?
I'm guilty of this. And I think lots of us as parents, we've minimized our kids' feelings before, you know, oh, you're just tired or you're just overreacting, or we've minimized our kids' feelings. And maybe then we don't have that equity in the relationship. They don't feel like they can talk to us, but hopefully we can repair that. Does that just mean checking in? Could we say, you know what? I feel like you tried to talk to me about this and I blew it. I'm sorry. Can we try again?
Yes. I think one of the best things that you can do as a parent is to model owning when you blow it.
Oh, yes.
When you say that and you open the door back up, for some kids, it's just a crack. For some kids, the door is now wide back open. It doesn't matter. The door is still open again.
And it's on us. It's on us as the parent to keep trying.
Absolutely. And there's also things that you can do with them to help lessen anxiety. Some of the factors is the screen time. It just is.
I know.
So much screen time. It's what they're watching. It's what they're picking up around them. So like less screen time and more free play is just really important.
I know.
And get them into activities that they find relieve stress. For some kids, it might be playing competitive hockey.
Right.
Like that's not going to relieve my stress.
No, no.
But for some kids, that's exactly what they need. Other kids, maybe it's an art class. For other kids, it's swimming. Whatever it might be, something that's fun for them that lets them relieve stress. And I know it seems strange when we're thinking kids have stress. They just do. We just don't give that language to it.
Right.
But they need fun activities that aren't screen time that let them just play and be kids.
Jory Stockdale is here. She works with families and she's sharing things that kids might not say out loud to parents, but things that parents need to know. Now, I noticed how delicate you were in that, not putting your kids in activities that you want them to be in. Are you going to be in hockey again this year? You're in competitive hockey and we got to do the camps and we got to do the extra practices. But what do the kids want to do that would take pressure away, not add it?
Some of the biggest things is the extracurricular activities and how do they tell their parents they don't want to do them anymore?
That's a big deal, isn't it?
Big deal. a lot of it is they don't want to disappoint you. Parents, they don't want to disappoint you, but they don't want to dance anymore, or right. they don't want to play hockey anymore, or, you know, like their interest has changed. And it's okay to have conversations. I read somewhere about a parent talking to their kid and discovering that their kid wasn't quitting. They just had discovered something else that they were more passionate about.
Mm.
There's a balance. Maybe sometimes there's a point of finishing a commitment, or like there are right. balances with it. But at the same time, often kids are fulfilling dreams that their parents had
yep.
or have for them. And now their kids' dreams are different.
Ouch. But so true. And I'm thinking, even if you wouldn't say, you know, oh, I'm not doing that. Well, if you say things like, I've paid for tier one hockey for 3 years and I spent all this money and time and we gave up every weekend. Well, you might not ever say it out loud, but your kid is hearing, I can never quit. I'm yes. in this forever.
Yes. And even just how excited they are to be part of it. And you think you're being supportive. Right. And yet that kid's thinking, my parent can't wait to do this again because all their friends are at the games and all their right. friends, right? Like they've got this own little community that they've built, which is beautiful, but your kid's done. And that does cause anxiety because no longer is that giving them stress relief or fun in their lives.
Yeah.
It's actually tripled that anxiety piece.
Just more pressure.
Just more.
Again, with good intentions.
Exactly.
Joy Stockdale, masters in families, working with families of all ages. Now we've got one more thing that you see that kids talk to you about that parents need to know.
So I think this is one of those things that I don't say kids talk to me about it. This is just the reality I know because I get to be in kids' lives. You need to be intentional about building other adults in your kids' lives.
Even though they might not think the same way.
It's just good for them to have a tribe, right? Like it's
yes.
good to have a tribe, and it's good to have that aunt or uncle that's that safe person that you know is a safe person
mm-hmm.
that can be the one that they call when they got a bad test mark before they talk to you about it or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But there's intentionality with that, right? There's intentionality to ensure that your kids have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there can be, you know, it stops parents doing that because of jealousy or
competition.
Like competition mm-hmm. or just different things like that. And also there are things that other adults, coaches, teachers, they can say to your kids that you can't say.
Or maybe you have said a million times. And it just hasn't gotten through.
Right.
This happened to me. This yes. happened to me. I was telling my kid something repeatedly and he went and he came home one night and he said, oh, yeah, my youth group leader said this. It was so profound, amazing. Da, da, da. And I'm thinking, I've said this 15 times to you. But I had a decision to make in that moment. And I had to bite my tongue and just say, that's so awesome.
I literally just had a conversation with a student last week. And they said, my parents gave me the same advice, but I just wanted to double check. And I was thinking, oh, I'm so thankful that I gave the same advice as yes, their parents.
Yes.
It was just confirmation for this student that what their parents said was good advice. And mm-hmm. I was able to reaffirm that. I think with that, though, parents need to listen to those teachers or coaches.
Yes.
So one of the things that is a struggle of being that other adult is when parents act like their child is never wrong, or they won't listen to some of the advice that people that are working with your kids are giving you.
Mm.
I'm not saying they're always right either. I'm saying take the time and listen to those people.
Yes.
And talk to your kids and recognize, you know, your child isn't 100% right. That adult isn't 100% right. Find some way to balance that, because otherwise they don't know how to have healthy relationships with other adults because they've just been taught that they're always right. And parents just need to understand, teachers, coaches, other adults that are in your kids' lives, most of the time.
Yes.
Most of the time, they are your kids' cheerleaders.
They want the best
for your kids. They want the best for your kids.
And if they're bringing something up, it's because they want your kids
yes.
to work on it.
Yes. And so I'm not saying that it's always.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the situations when it's not. But for the most part, they're your kids' cheerleaders. And so look at it as an extra help in your life raising your kids.
Let's take the help. You know, we always say we want a village, right? It takes a village to raise the child, but villagers be villaging.
Yes.
So you got to be able to take the village and it's going to look different. Jory Stockdale, thank you so much for letting us behind the curtain. As a parent, what are the things that we don't see that we need to be aware of? We can use this to have better relationships with our kids and to have a better life. Thanks for being on the show.
No problem. It was a pleasure to come and be with you today.
I want you to send me a text right now with your takeaway. What is the thing you're going to work on at home? We can't do it all, but we can do something. Is it going to be to repair when we blow it? Can we come back and say, sorry, you know what? I want to try that again. I don't like how I showed up there. Is it going to be being open to other people, coaches, aunts, uncles, people, and what they're going to say, what they're going to bring to your attention about your kid? Is it about having boundaries on what you share with your child? Send me a text right now, 1-877-332-TALK. On this show, we don't hide from the hard conversations because it's looking some of these things in the eye that is going to help us to have a better life. So we're going to work on it, baby step at a time, and I will see you next week. It's A Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.